Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Countercurrents podcast. I've been asked to fill in for Greg Johnson because he can't make it this evening, so I'm here instead. I'm Millennial Woes. You can find me at millennialwoes.com, on Telegram at the same name, and on Odyssey at the same name. And I think most of you are probably familiar with me, so I won't bore you with an autobiography. Now, my guest is Aureus Press. Now, Aureus Press, well, do you want to describe Aureus Press for people? And welcome to the show.
Oh, Jesus, I'm not sure I do. That's a tough one. And thank you. Yes, Aureus Press. Well, it is technically, supposedly, a publishing front. I do publish books. So I put the word press in there. And, you know, I sort of do what I want. And it's hard to say maybe exactly what it is. But I do tend to publish books, let's say, on either science fiction and fantasy or sort of, I was going to say topical political stuff, but not exactly. More like historical framework philosophy stuff from a certain perspective so far. And probably historical nonfiction is on the way as well. So it's sort of a publishing thing, even though it's mostly just me. And I mean, how else would you describe me? I don't even know. I'm just this guy that kind of does things in my own little funny way.
Well, I mean, I would say, see, if I were to describe you, I would describe you as a guy who shares an awful lot of images on Gab and Telegram, and I think Twitter as well. It's weird. This sounds like an affectation, but it's absolutely true. Once you're banned from a platform, you just forget. Like, unless you create a sock account, you just forget what goes on there. So I've forgotten about everything that goes on Twitter and everything that goes on YouTube. People have to remind me, you know, that world that you left or you were kicked out of or whatever, it still is there. You know, it's still going on. So all the gossiping and bitching that goes on Twitter is still going on, you know? That's one of the things I really don't miss about it at all. But anyway, that's another matter.
Twitter is the most vicious place because especially of the fact that you can't delete someone's comments, right? You can do that on the Telegram. So when somebody's being vicious, you just remove it and it's absolutely gone and it's over, right? But on Twitter, when someone, you get this war scenario set up because comments are there forever. And so when you attack one another, it becomes a real bitter, bitter business.
And public as well. So it's all a public record of your mutual antagonism, which might not even be about very much. I mean, a lot of these arguments are just pointless. People pretending to miss the point. That's the thing that used to make my blood boil. You know, when someone would be they'd disagree with you, but instead of disagreeing with you directly, they would instead try to pick apart what you'd said as if you hadn't actually said very much, as if they just don't understand what you're trying to say. I mean, it's the kind of thing that makes me just want to punch them in the face. It's infuriating. But anyway, that's a whole other thing. So you don't get into many arguments on Twitter. You use it for sharing photos.
Well, I have. I know. And recently I was for sure.
Yes. why don't you tell people that story? I should say beforehand, we don't have a topic. So if we're not sure what we're going to talk about, we might, I've got a couple of ideas, but there's no sort of grand thing for this. So Aureus and I are going to just have a chat and we'll try to keep it topical and interesting for people. But if you want us to talk about something in particular, you'll have to send a super chat to the Countercurrents Entropy. So, but other than that, it's going to be a very laid-back stream for the simple reason that there isn't much going on just now in the way of current affairs. So, Aureus, tell the story of your recent dust-up on Twitter.
Yeah, so we're ramble-tamble. We're freestyle here, chickens. We're just going to... This is exactly what you always tell me not to do is... Just
you're right. It is, but and I would ordinarily say don't do this, but in this case, I really just don't know what to. I just don't have a topic, and I apologize for that. By the way, I should apologize for that because it's not good form.
But some people don't. I don't like. It's not as universally bad. Maybe it is. It's bad overall. Most people do want, you're right, do want a solid topic, know what they're getting into and if they're going to tune in.
Yeah.
But I can't seem to do, I can do that occasionally. I know you were upset with me and you're like, what is he doing? Why is he just doing rolling dice? But I mean, yeah, I just can't help.
Well, that's the other thing that I was going to say is that you share a lot of photos and images, but you also do our weekly stream on YouTube. And I think it's on Odyssey as well, isn't it?
Yeah, but the way Odyssey picks them up and
there's not live. Right.
I should say too that I'm still on Facebook of all places, and that's really an interesting place to still be as well. You mentioned Gab, but I don't actually post to Gab. I can only stretch myself so broadly.
Of course, I mean what I would give a lot for is an app that posts something to all of these things, so you could link it to your Twitter, your Gab, your Telegram, Facebook. Yeah. Getter, Minds, that's still going, all of these things, and it would just happen, you know. That would be that would be a godsend.
But there is one, I think,
they're Facebook. And you can also do it with Twitter as well, the Twitter API. But the others, and I tried to contact Andrew Torba to do this on Gab. I think I did get the message through to him, but he never replied. And yeah, other platforms as well. You see, to me, this would be an such beyond common sense to enable this, to have this function on their platforms, and yet none of them. I mean, I just despair. You know, the gormlessness.
They all greedily want you to choose their platform and stick to it exclusively. Is that it? Is that the reason?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's either that or it's just incompetence.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know, but it would
be. You call me on that, but I don't post the Gab nearly as much as I should, and I wouldn't say I do mean to, and I would like to, I do think it's a great platform for being so renegade and completely doing its own thing. But I just
it is it's admirable. Yeah, I'm gonna say
I don't get the attention and the growth there that I do on other ones, probably because of my quirky pseudo pagan, you know, chicks and stuff. Like a lot of Gab is very Christian and very kind of.
Not that
you know what I mean. I don't
but it's a bit overbearing though, isn't it? I mean, they've really ramped it up over the last year or two, the Christian nationalism stuff. And I'm far from anti-Christian. You know, I'm not a Christian. I'm not a pagan. But I would hate to call myself an atheist. But nonetheless, I don't have a dog in this fight. But the Christian stuff is. Overbearing on it with
well God. Yeah, it's like you know, how can you say this is the strength, this is both the strength and the weakness of Christianity. It's the two sides of the same coin, is that there it calls for a dogmatism where you are exclusive about things, and when you draw a line on certain things and you say I'm not going to do this, I can't do this, and they get upset when they see other people doing it, and it becomes annoying because they're like, you know, they're sort of telling you what to do, or they have to abide by rules that are limiting, you can say. But at the same time, that's a great strength because it really makes an us versus them scenario that is that necessary kind of boundary you need to be anything strongly. And any proper religion probably should do that. So that's if you look at things from a more pagan point of view, it's annoying, but I can admire it in a way as being their strength as well. And I don't know what to say or do about it beyond that. Overall, though, yeah. I do enjoy in the pagan or Platonic or deistic view that you are more open to consider all possible ideas without self-limiting yourself either fearfully or, you know, through just that kind of this is forbidden kind of thing, you
know? yeah so that was Gab, and then Minds is still going. There's Getter and there's Parler.
I have a Mind somewhere. I forgot about that.
Yeah, I've got it as well. I mean, it's yeah, that goes back to 2017. Well, I'm sure it goes back beyond that, but I joined it, I think, in 2017. And that was that point when we were becoming aware of the possibility of censorship, although it was nowhere near. I mean, it was just, I think at that point, for the vast majority of us, it was just a sort of theoretical possibility, you know, that in the future they might do this. But we didn't know that 2 years later it would be, you know, purge, 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 to the point nowadays. I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, YouTube is a nightmare, absolute nightmare. So So yeah, a lot of people joined other like Gab and BitChute and Mines, and the other one. What was the other one called? Vidme. Vidme. That was a big one for like 6 months, and then it just maybe a year, and then it disappeared. Just stopped. It was so strange.
I joined that Russian one at one point. VK was it called? VK.
Oh yeah, yeah. VK.
I still have an account out in the ether there, as well as Mines. Can I ask? What kind of following you have in Mines that you, did you get much out of Mines?
Let me see. I'll actually go to it right now and tell
you. I didn't like that one, actually. I thought Mines was good. I liked it. But it just was like, this is going to be too many. I can't run all these accounts. Because I've never been banned fully enough.
I've got 2K on Mines.
Oh, that's like what I get on Gab.
So that's not bad. Right. I mean, that the last time it's weird to think that they're still there because I haven't posted anything since November the 27th, 2017.
They're waiting all the time. They're waiting.
Yeah, it's so strange to think. Yeah, maybe people are going in there every day and, Millennial Woes hasn't posted anything yet. That's extremely unlikely.
But make a post for Christmas for these poor souls.
Well, you know, if they did what I've asked, I would be using it. Well, this thing about like a function so that you can post remotely to it. I mean, I would absolutely use it if they did that. But anyway, so yeah, we were going to tell the story of your recent dust up on Twitter. So here we go.
Okay, so yeah. Okay, so you're right. So I post a lot of images. So this confuses people. Like, so I say I'm running a publishing house, I'm publishing books. That's really my main thing and what I'm doing. So I took to social media because my first book was about art, about decline and fall of Western art. So I immediately began posting images of Western art, obviously, and sort of like my account became known for that because of this book. And then I thought, well, I want to write other books as well. So I kind of had to diverge and do other things. So I do post a lot of images and I've gotten really quite used to it. It's something I do, like I'll be working on the computer and I'll have like Tumblr and Pinterest open. And I'll just, if I see a fetching image that suddenly catches my fancy and I feel fits in with my overall, idiom, I will grab it and post it. And sometimes I do it scandalously so because I'm feeling mirthful and it causes me joy and because I don't feel like being limited or only doing things a certain way. So I do occasionally post a scandalous one on purpose because I love it. And, you know, because I think it's great.
Occasionally and scandalous. Could you, do you want to define your terms?
Well, obviously, like the chicks, I will post like beautiful babes, like, Brigitte Bardot and Claudia Cardinale and in their swimsuits, you know, and worse than that. I mean, I will do that. And I love it. You love it. Yes, I will. Well, I mean, who cares?
I do like it. I mean, there are lots of pretty girls. I mean, you and I have different tastes in that regard, but still
I thought we were pretty similar, really. So you don't agree with the... Maybe you don't like the heavy metal mix with the gun, with the bullet belts and things. Is that?
My ideal is like Michelle Pfeiffer or Avril Lavigne, that kind of waifish figure. But so I think you're more into the sort of voluptuous type. But anyway, let's not get into that. That's so great to be talking about such things on a philosophy.
So this particular one, yeah. So I'd actually posted it to Telegram, and I thought to myself, that is hilarious because it was ludicrous. It was like a woman in a field of sunflowers, and she had one of those what do you call the thing, like a corset on or something. So she looked kind of sort of trad or something, but she's lifting her dress like, and almost fully exposed, except for like perfectly placed little sunflower.
Yes, the sunflower preserves her modesty.
Exactly, yeah. So it wasn't the full thing, but obviously I know full well that I'm posting a cheeky thing to be either funny or, you know, it strikes me at once as aesthetic. It's based in a way, in its way, you know, where it's still kind of like sort of pseudo Wheatfield posting, but in a cooler way. And it's scandalous, exploitational, in that way, sort of anti-feminist, which I kind of like. And funny, it's kind of funny as well. So anyways, I posted that there and someone made a comment there. Somehow the people were talking about virility or fertility or whatever. And someone made a comment, if you have, what was it? If you have one.
I think I can remember. It was one man plus 10 women and plus 1 year equals 10 babies. 10 men plus one woman plus 1 year equals one baby. And then there was some conclusion statement.
Yeah, so it was that. It was just like a basic comment. I mean, it's sort of a, if you can follow that, it's just basically saying, you know, it's again, sort of an anti, kind of a pro, what would you say, pro-Mormon, pro-Islamic view to love and fertility.
But
it's a basic fact, a fact of life, like just simple logic, right? So I thought, well, that's clever and funny. Why don't I steal that guy's little comment and I'll post the salacious picture on Twitter with the comment, with that fact. And won't that be hilarious? And probably, because I'm so badly shadow banned on there, I intentionally go to little extremes just to see if you'll notice anything. It's like, you know, a post that would normally have been making 400, 500 likes get like literally 4 or 40 or something. Now I'm so badly done.
Incredible. Yeah, go on.
But then it caught on, and people were extremely upset about it. Not everybody, but a lot of people, yeah, that were like absolutely furious, raging. Although I expressed no personal opinion in the actual tweet. I mean, obviously I'm insinuating something, but I don't think they get the sort of humor of it or the,
It's amazing. I had a look at the resulting reply thread. Right. And it was full of people saying that you are probably an incel. Yeah. You've probably never kissed a girl. The usual things. It's amazing how often. And I actually posted an infographic on your Telegram channel that is something I'd found somewhere, that if you annoy a woman, she will use one of the following three insults. You've got a small dick. You're gay, or you're an incel. Yeah. It's one of those three. And it's remarkable in your Twitter thread there, so many people say, and guys saying it. So this is the other part of it. You've got the simps who come in and act as women in order, in the hopes of pleasing and impressing the women and winning their approval. It's so pathetic. It's so absolutely, I mean, I cannot think of a lower creature than a man who betrays other men in order to please and impress women. I think it's utterly loathsome behavior. But that thread was full of it.
Yeah, I mean, they're talking to me about, you know, you're not getting any pussy. What's the expression they love? That's how's it go? There was tons of it. What no pussy does to a. No, it does to a, you know, whatever, to a guy, to a person, to a motherfucker, whatever. You know, that basement, they repeat that over and over again. And I got the same comments when I made anti-rap statements. So it's kind of like a, and it's from like kids. I think it's like white trash American kids. I noticed there was a certain type of person appeared on the thread that I've never seen before that was truly horrifying to me. It was like they were sports ball hillbillies, but they were also Reds. They were also commies. It was weird, like long beards and NASCAR and all this. Like, but also, Bosch, like,
you mean,
is that what he is? I don't even know anything. Yeah, maybe that's working. But like,
I think there is a type of leftist now who goes in for sort of traditional masculine things like sports ball and even, you know, like porn, action movies. But his political worldview is entirely leftist. So. It's a weird sort of combination, actually.
Yeah, I never seen it before. I didn't expect. I was utterly appalled. It was like the worst of two worlds combining into a new creature that was just.
Yes.
And they look vicious though, vicious and angry about this. I didn't even state an opinion in this thing. You know, this was amazing to me that the level of anger. I started to say, like, I'm going to start like an anger support group for this tweet, because like I couldn't believe people were getting so upset.
I noticed how calm you were in your replies to people.
Yeah, because I, you know, if I really was a, you know, a single guy, not, maybe I would get, no, even then I wouldn't get upset. But like, you know, I'm not, if I'm not getting any pussy, it's for the exact opposite reason that they think. It's because I have been so virile in the past that I have a bunch of kids. And, you know, when I go to bed,
you're just worn out.
So arguably they might have a certain point to a certain degree, but you know, it's not going to bother me. But yeah, I mean, it's the anger, and it was a
It's something I noticed. Like I've noticed this with boomers very markedly, but it's also true of younger leftists, like boomers in general, even sort of right-wing boomers. But then in the younger generations, it's everyone. It's the lefties. And this tendency is that sex is just... basically feminist attitudes towards sex, where abortion is absolutely fine, birth control, the pill is absolutely fine, promiscuous. They've got this 1970s attitude about sexual liberation, and right. It's just a free-for-all. Anything goes, everything's fine, and how dare you judge someone else's choices? This seems to be the default view for boomers, for obvious reasons. I mean, it was the mood when they were young. Yeah. But then with younger leftists, it's also that, how dare you judge anyone? How dare you judge anyone's choices? And what you did there with that tweet, well, you weren't even judging. You were just laying the groundwork for a judgment to be made. And that's enough, you know, that's enough. They saw what the implication was and they reacted very badly to it.
It was like three different, well, maybe at least three different major groups were involved there. There was Reds that somehow hopped on. First, no, it wasn't Reds to begin with. Who was? Oh, I'll tell you what, this is the weird thing. The first group that attacked me over that tweet, and when I looked at, and they were kind of like irony kids, you know, irony bros or whatever. And the only thing they all had in common is they were all followed by Justin Wang. So I thought it was something to do with him, that he...
Justin,
you know, Justin Wang, he's some... look him up on YouTube.
I will.
Yeah, he's like an he talks about internet phenomena and stuff. I vaguely knew who he was, but he's got like a very large following. Then he was followed by the Antifa crowd, and again these weird NASCAR hillbilly bisexual hillbillies, whatever the fuck they were. I mean, really crazy. Like they were really just they disgusted me. But then I cleared all that. I managed to just finally. They passed by. Then it was just like regular women just upset over the fact that they think, what's he saying? They kept saying, what do you mean by this? And I would just say nothing, just exactly what it says. And that's true. I mean nothing further, really. Can I not just mean what I say?
This is the thing that Morgoth has pointed out. And actually, it was something that I didn't call it the hatchling. Morgoth came up with that. But I remember noting this. I wrote an essay 10 years ago where I noted the debating habits of leftists. And one of them is this pretending to miss the point or needing everything explained to them so that it just wears you down. It exhausts you. Mm. And of course, even when you explain something, they then take issue with the explanation and pretend not to understand some aspect of that. So yeah. It just goes on and on and on. and it's just a nightmare. I mean, my only, see, it's just as well I'm not on Twitter now, because I would just be treating these people with utter contempt now. I would be so dismissive and rude to them. To be honest, I probably wouldn't last very long. I'd get banned all over again.
Yeah, all
I just you can have do... no time for this fucking nonsense anymore. Just,
yeah, all you can do is block them, really. If you really try to engage, everything's stacked in their favor. You'll just, like, I'm shadow banned as it is. I wouldn't mind keeping the account because it's still valuable to me for grifting, to be honest.
Right, yeah.
So I just block them, really. If I respond, I'll do so as decently as I can. Sometimes they really annoy me, and if I feel I can get away with truly insulting somebody, like, I wish I would have insulted those guys. Those guys really annoy me.
But there was another group, I should say, that at the end that came on, and that was, like, young right-wing people that are... They weren't like feminists. Some of them might be some of these rad fem simps.
I was wondering if it was going to be the rad fems, but
There was a bit of that. There was a bit of that. They weren't too bad though. But no, there were people that are upset about trad, because I still have, even though I don't go call myself trad, really, I still have trad in my handle. And they're like, oh, these trads, look at them posting. They all just want to, like, you know, have orgies all the time. They pretend they're, you know, all about their Norman Rockwell paintings. There's a lot of right wing people are very upset in making this kind of comment as well. You know, so.
And why could you explain that? I mean, have you any idea why they would be upset by this?
There's a whole community on there that are upset over trad and the idea of trad.
ever, if they're probably related to the Radfam group. I mean, there's so many of these subcults things. It's so funny, is it, that we should even know or have to know all these. Anyways, but they don't like the trad thing because of it. It became sort of taken over by people who became converted to Catholicism. We've talked about this, I think. Became converted to Catholicism and stuff on Twitter and became like ravingly Orthodox and everything's about chastity and this kind of thing. So they became known, the concept of trad, at least on Twitter, became associated with really strict Catholicism and stuff. And that people who were annoyed by that, who are also right-wing, will lash out whenever they see the term, especially if someone with trad in their handle like me is posting semi-nude chicks. You know, they don't understand. They think I'm genuinely trad and I'm having a weakness and a breakdown and I'm like Billy Swaggart or something. I'm actually getting prostitutes after my sermon or something, you know, this kind of.
Right. I mean, right. I remember you wrote a Telegram post about this about a year ago, maybe, where you said that your posts seem to, especially the ones of scantily clad women, attract the ire of these types, these trad-cath types. It's interesting. And I remember you saying that they've got a sort of Christian, a very strict Christian notion of modesty, and that the naked body is sort of, you know, dirty and gross and low grade and all that. Whereas you contrasted that with a more pagan view of, you know, the body is beautiful and to be celebrated and so on. But the other thing is that you say that you've got trad in your name, but it's traditional Western art, isn't it? So I think your Twitter handle is Trad West Art.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So they mistakenly think. Right. Okay. Okay.
Well, it wasn't those ones. It's not those guys that were attacking me either. It's their enemies that were attacking me. The ones who think I'm a tradcath and think, oh, look, we caught the tradcath posting semi nudes. He's a pervert.
It's amazing you can fall foul of so many different groups for different reasons, just with one innocuous post,
with a fact, absolutely an indisputable fact, and yes, a picture of a girl, almost.
See, this is interesting because it links to something that it's been on my mind recently, which is just and I've talked about it before, but I'll say it here, this sheer amount of lying and dishonesty that goes on nowadays and it goes into forming the modern worldview. Like that, for example, is, you know, women have limited fertility. And it's slower. They can only have one a year, whereas a man can have 10 a year or even more than that. I mean, this is a biological fact. Mm. But nowadays, we're actually meant to believe that they're like male and female isn't even a thing. It doesn't even really exist. I mean, and they're pushing. I mean, the trans thing is only one example of this. That there are other examples, like with COVID, obviously, with the vaccine, and with climate change, and with race. That was the original one, was like that races don't exist. And it's all lies.
Nothing exists.
I remember seeing a biology, I think it was on Twitter. And this is like 2-3 years ago, something like that. And some guy, it was a discussion about race. And some guy came in and said, look, I've got a degree in biology. when I tell you that there's no such thing as race, you know, I'm speaking from being very well educated on the topic. And this is, the thing is, you can understand him feeling confident about that statement, because we all know that the university is a place of learning and education and knowledge. It's where the sum of human knowledge is inculcated into the young, into the students. And we've still got this idea from the past, maybe 50, 100 years ago, that the university is a place of truth, certainly in the sciences.
Yeah.
And that simply is not the case anymore. And I think, for you and me, that this is not a revelation. For the listeners, this is not a revelation. And yet it's still a shocking thing to contemplate that these seats of learning have now been converted into machines of indoctrination and machines of lying, machines whose purpose is to install a load of bullshit into the minds of the young, like nothing short of that.
Yeah, while they pay for it, while they pay a lot of money for it, often, in many cases.
Yeah, but that's a separate issue. I mean, obviously that adds to how ludicrous it all is, but that's not the worst of it. I mean, the worst of it is that these people then go into the world, they start their adult lives loaded with nonsense, like literally just lies that govern how they view everything, from male-female relations, relations between different groups. That shapes politics, everything. Everything.
I wouldn't say it's a small thing, though, the fees either, because that's a major thing. Because I remember thinking that when I was in university, I remember I was paying a bunch of money, and I remember thinking, like, what if I get a bad teacher, and what I learn is a bunch of horse shit? Like, what guarantees do I have? And I realized there was none. And I sort of held out hope, and I remember thinking, like, well, I just would refuse to allow myself to worry about that, even though it's entirely possible.
Yeah, of course. I mean,
because of the nightmare of the debt, it would affect you. You would refuse to let yourself think that because of, I've just paid all this money. I can't believe that I've been lied to.
Well, that's part of it, isn't it? It's the buyer's remorse, or what's it called? The sunk cost fallacy, where you've invested, literally, so you're now in debt. So it bloody well better have been worth it. So you don't. I mean, this is the whole thing about it's easier to trick a man than to convince him that he has been tricked, especially when he's paid tens of thousands of pounds for it, or euros, or dollars, or whatever.
Here, let me ask you this. I've got a good question for you, but I don't know if you want to answer. Maybe tell me if you think it's too risky. It would put us down a path we don't want to go on, but it would be interesting. Well, how would you personally, if you had powers, fix university? What would you do? Maybe we shouldn't.
Well, I would shut most of them down.
Yeah.
I mean, all of them except the most prestigious, I think, just don't need to be there. But the thing is, I mean, it depends how broad the scope is, because I would actually say the same about school. I don't think that formal schooling is needed for beyond reading, writing, and arithmetic. I don't know what people are learning in school. I know this sounds sort of extreme, but I really don't know what's the point? Why 13 fucking years to learn how to read and write and do arithmetic? Of course not. That's ludicrous, even for the low IQ. So it's not, and so the 13 years are mostly spent wasting their time, wasting everyone's time. They're not learning practical skills. They're not learning about budgeting. They're not learning about, I don't know, anything useful. And I have a lot of sympathy, as I think you do as well, for the idea of learning in and of itself. Like, I don't think that knowledge and education should be purely about utility. I like the idea that there are intelligent people, thoughtful people, inquisitive people, and that there is a system, an environment designed for them, to nurture them, to educate them. The dreaming spires of Cambridge and Oxford. But for the vast majority of people, such an environment is absolutely useless. It's got nothing to, they've got no use for it at all. But I would say the same about school as well. I don't really know what the point is anymore. I'm not sure if there was ever, if it was ever a good idea, really. I don't know.
Well, I like the old Egyptian sort of Roman model, where it's like you have guilds. You had craft guilds for every possible vocation. And most people would, their families would be involved. They'd be the stonecutters, shoemakers, whatever it was, the painters. And generally your family would say, not necessarily, but you would sort of fall into this vocation if you had nothing else to do, certainly. And you would go off to your guild to learn. I mean, I think they had a basic common education early school system as well. So that was always a thing. I do believe kids, you do need to socialize kids a bit.
That's separate. But... Yes, and I completely agree with you about that. But that's separate from learning and the main thing that school is supposedly for, which is, I mean, of course they need to be socialized, and that goes for whether, of course they do. But the actual thing about schooling, education, again, I've forgotten what it's called, not triumvirate, but the Latin, the classical education. Absolutely, it would be nice. But again, it's weird because this relates to the nature of society today. What do we need education for? Basically, when the machines are doing everything, We don't seem to need many people anymore. I mean, this is what Yuval Noah Harari caused a lot of trouble for by saying, that we don't really need that many people anymore. So then, well, why do we need them educated? And then why do we need them classically educated? What's it all for? What is society doing at this point, other than sustaining comfort and luxury? And of course, it's not even doing that anymore. But still, the point is, our societies don't have raison d'etres. They don't have a style, an aesthetic. There's nothing. I mean, if you look at Victorian England as the most obvious example, it stood for a civilization that was physically manifest as an empire and as a country and a capital city, London. And it included all of these ideas, and it's certainly a hierarchy of ideas.
Yeah.
And so you can understand what the point was of education in that context. It was to prepare the learned, the intelligent, for authoritative roles within that society. And it was all justified, well, partly by the empire. The idea that we are spreading this. This is an attitude to life, an attitude to existence that came from us, and now we are spreading it. We're giving it to the less fortunate than ourselves, exactly. In the far-flung corners of the world. You can understand that the society had a raison d'etre, and therefore everyone within that society could understand what they were personally contributing to, what their life was for, in a sense. I mean, they obviously also had religious things, that I am God's child and all of that kind of stuff as well. We don't have that either. No. So our society doesn't have a raison d'etre, and we don't have religion. We certainly don't have an empire, not an explicit empire. And I think that an empire should be explicit. You know, I don't like what we have now with that, you know, Pax Americana. I don't like that. And for multiple reasons. I don't like the clandestine nature of it, the sneakiness of it, but I also don't like what it actually gives to those people. It gives them Burger King and devastation.
How I would fix schools, or the universities, I should say, are part of what I would do. And without getting into horrendous details and some of the awful things that would probably have to be done, I would certainly prevent certain people from educating and root out certain educators, or first of all. But another major thing, more controversial, I would split up a male and female into their own campuses. And again, like the Egyptian model, I would steer the female campus more towards, in the ancient Egypt, it would be dance, poetry, managing the slaves, things like this, whatever. Feminine things that will lead to
feminine women,
fertility, and in continuing the generations and ensure. I mean, this what we have today with this feminism. Like, it's bad enough that I think we've feminized our culture so and destroyed it that way. But you know, it's reason enough alone. The collapse of the birth rates and having no future is reason enough alone to say we can't really do this. Like, you can have exceptional.
You're absolutely right. It's one thing where everyone's miserable and the Zoomers aren't having any sex and the millennials are depressed and all that. And women are in the workplace and the workplaces had to be transformed for that. So then the men don't feel that they belong there and all the speech codes. All of that is bad enough. Ugh. But then you've got the sort of ice cold fact that feminism is literally causing us to die out as a group. It's literally extincting us in real time. If all the other stuff wasn't bad enough, surely that, like the fact that it's literally killing us, we are literally not going to exist because of this thing. Like, you'd think that surely is the death knell for this ideology. I mean, sure, it can't be much worse than that. It literally kills you.
And all you have to do is steer.
We ban all sorts of things that do that, you know, and yet this ideology seems to get a pass.
Yeah, but that alone, never mind the feminization of culture, but all you have to do is steer women en masse towards traditional roles and you'll be fine. Like, you know, and the exceptional ones will find a way, your Boudiccas, et cetera, will find a way to rise to the surface if they are that type. So it's not a huge oppression deal. It's just a matter of basic survival.
It's the same with something like Madame Curie, you know, or even a filmmaker like Leni Riefenstahl. I mean, there were always outstanding women. No sensible society would take a female genius and say, okay, you've got to go into the kitchen. We're just not going to make use of your incredible, unique skill. I mean, yeah. For God's, of course, there would always be exceptions. So anyway, sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, now we assume every single one is a Boudicca and a Hypatia, and, you know, it's not the case. What was my other point? Oh, yeah, the other point about the campuses is, I think a large part of the reason campuses went so hard left is because I think it's fair to say that young women, especially young childless women, tend to be left-leaning. And when they go to college, they're at the absolute height of their powers of beauty. And they're in that age of, you know, what is it, between like 18 and 25 or whatever, when they're unstoppable. I mean, everybody wants them, including the teachers.
They're in the Aureus Press image range.
Yeah. So think of the power and influence they have on a campus, including with everybody, to push things leftward. I mean, absolutely. When they're at unstoppable power.
Absolutely. And of course, the young men don't want to say no to them, so because they want... They want the prize, as it were. So they, of course, they'll agree with anything.
But even the teachers, everybody would be want to kind of kowtow to them a little bit. I think, you know, they have huge power and sway when they're that beautiful. So another reason to keep them somewhere safer. When the combination of their opinion is at their worst and their beauty is at the highest, I mean, that's when they're the most lethal weapons.
Yeah. That's an interesting thought in itself, you know, that they can corrupt an institution without even meaning to, because their youth, fertility, beauty will lead people to give them, to placate them and appease them.
Yeah, it's not their fault even, it's just like
no, it's just a fact. But again, see, this is what's so annoying, is you and I can have that observation and look at it and discuss it only because we're not cowed by political correctness.
Right.
You know, there isn't something forbidding, well, in theory, there is something forbidding us from seeing it, but we're immune to it, at least on this podcast. So, but in the broader society, I mean, I remember, there are protocols preventing people from seeing this kind of thing. I remember a friend of mine, he was into indie music and he was in the indie scene, but his worldview was completely normie and, you know, just, oh. And at one point we were having this conversation about, I don't know what it was, I've forgotten what it was, but I said something and he replied, yeah, but why is it that if a woman sleeps around, she gets condemned for that, but if a guy does it, he gets applauded for it?
Yeah.
And he said it as if this was a killer question, you know, that, oh, we've just uncovered some glaring double standard in our society. Oh, my God.
What did you say?
I answered him very tersely and immediately. I said, because men and women are different.
Nice.
And I deliberately left it hanging like that so that he would, I guess I was annoyed with him, so I wanted to embarrass him, you know. So I just said those words. I just said, because men, well, why do we react to promiscuity differently between the sexes? Because the sexes are different.
Well,
and it's as simple as that. And of course, and he looked at me and he realized he wasn't going to get any more than that. And he sort of smiled, and then I think he sort of chuckled, like, and it was as if he was saying, oh, yeah. So they are. Like I'd forgotten that, you know. It was something I knew when I was 15 in the year 2000. Somehow I've forgotten it by now in the year 2015. But you're right. I remember now. Men and women are different.
Yeah.
You know, this is an example of the bullshit that we're expected to believe and to profess. And he was doing it to me, his friend of many years, expecting me to go along with it like all his other friends do.
Little did he know.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not sort of patting myself in the back here for being edgy. It was just, it's quite the opposite. It annoyed me that I had to be the voice of sanity on something so prosaic. Like, it's something that everyone should know and everyone used to know. It used to be the most, I mean, for Christ's sake, you know, two-year-olds, three-year-olds know that boys and girls are different, and not just physically different, that they're different, that their natures are different, They know that. And yet you've got adults. Good God. I mean, it brings you to the cliche that, you know, there are some things so obvious that only a highly educated person could not see them.
Yeah.
And there are some things so absurd that only a highly educated person could believe them.
Well, I wonder, should we do the listeners a service then and see if we can break down exactly why that would be the case instead of just saying they're different? I think I know what I would say. I don't know if would you have a feel you had an explanation of if say pretend your friend doubled down and quizzed you on it. What would you say? What makes it so that you would say that?
Well, there would be different approaches possible to this. One of them I would say is, you know, the sexual dimorphism is basically endemic throughout the animal kingdom. So why would humans be any different?
Right.
That would be one thing. Also, I would say, why, if their anatomies are so different, why would their natures be the same? Why would they not be equipped with natures attuned to their anatomies?
Right.
And then I would say, do you just experientially, do you actually think that men and women are the same? Right. And if all of those failed, then I would get into the nitty-gritty and say, okay, here it is. Here's the fucking hit, the biology lecture, you chump. Here it is. They've got a small number of eggs. We've got an unbelievable quantity of sperm. And that kind of dictates what we're going to do.
Yes, that's true. That's definitely all true. I would also go, I could argue, say, from somebody, how can I put this? Like, if anybody knows, your average mother, if she has a son, she's not going to feel ashamed if he's, you know, getting a few girls, right? And whereas with her own daughter, she would be like, watch out, right? Everybody knows this is a natural feeling everybody would have. And it's hard to describe or pinpoint exactly why that would be. But I think there's simply no harm in the man having that kind of experience and showing that he can get what females he wants. It's a sign that he's going to do well in that regard. And even generally the females don't mind it either.
I mean, yeah, there's the whole thing about the Chinese, I've forgotten what it is, but the key that unlocks many locks is a highly prized possession. The lock that opens for any key is worthless.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, there's that too. Yeah, it's like, yeah, because I mean, the woman eventually has to be a mother as well. And, you know, women inescapably, especially like, I can say like having sons and daughters, like, they're just sort of sweeter and more, like, I don't know, more fragile, right? And this kind of thing is dangerous for them, I think. They're, in a way, they're perpetually slightly more, naive isn't the word, softer and more fragile and just not as hard. They can't be as hard as men can be. So it's always risky for them to get anything like that that takes away or puts their innocence at risk. There's always an element of innocence to them. Even when they do stuff like that, it's like, they generally do it out of a kind of a soft-heartedness or something, not out of like a man's ribald conquest. It's a whole different view to the whole thing. And it seems to be dangerous. Like, I don't mind. I'm not a total prude about it. Like, I didn't insist my wife was a virgin, and, you know, I'm, you know, probably happy she wasn't even, in a way. I mean, I wouldn't mind either, but, you know, it doesn't bother me at all. But this element of in their essential origins of what they are, I think, if you want to protect girls more from a lot of things. And there's not much, there's no benefit to them in that as much. And even to a man, you can say there's no harm in a man in being a virgin until he's married as well either, I guess. But no, it seems like a natural thing for anybody, any parent or anybody to, I guess, feel a certain pride if he's able to get women, I guess, because it's not easy. You know? Not everybody can do it.
No. I mean, I don't know how else you would approach this. Because I was going through it the other day in my head, sort of mentally, I was remembering this incident with that friend from, I think it was 2015. And I was trying to think, could I have answered him more gently? Because I mean, he didn't react badly. You know, as I say, he chuckled and realized he was being stupid. But I wondered, could I have been more informative to him? And there is the thing about the key in the log. But then the question is that's not enough of an answer because
that's just a parable. Like it's not.
Yeah. But of course, someone could take issue with it and say, "Well, why are women the locks and why are men the keys?" And well, then you, because then you've got to explain that. And I guess you could say women are the selectors.
Men, like, it's not. It's not the end. It's not the end of the world if a woman has had, you know, several partners either. But
no, it's just, not. Like, and the people make too big a deal out of that. Yeah. I think. But again, you and I are sort of off a certain era. Perhaps.
What are we? I don't know. I saw someone refer to themselves recently as the sleaze right. I don't know what. I'm not sure what that is, or if we would fall into that category because we're not.
Well, I certainly wouldn't volunteer myself for that category. But I what I meant was off a certain era. I think the 90s had a more, and the 80s
of a certain vintage. Yeah, we're old. That's exactly right. Yeah. A lot of this inexplicable behavior is age. With, like, a lot of these kids cannot grasp where we're coming from anymore. I've realized this now. I mean, this is natural, I guess, when you get older. And we are getting old. Yeah, that is it. There's a difference in fundamental difference in experience, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've got a friend who was a young man during the 70s, and the way he talks about it, it sounds like it was just a nonstop orgy. It was just constant sex with like loads of, and he's not a sort of he's not a stud. You know, he's not the most outgoing sort of guy, and yet from what he says, and I don't think he's lying or exaggerating, from what he says, he was just basically throughout that whole decade, he was just having a great time with young women. And I've heard from other men of that generation that it's very much, it was just, you know, because AIDS wasn't a thing, the pill had just arrived, so they didn't need to use condoms. So I mean, of course, there was other STDs, but the point is, it was not, you know, casual sex was definitely a thing in the 60s and 70s. And I think, and probably still the 80s, I think then AIDS and then I think in the 90s, it started a cultural, something changed and people started having sex less. And then again in the 2000s, and then definitely in the 2010s, you've got the dating apps and that whole culture. At this point, it's a very strange thing because now women don't even need to give sex in order to get attention and money from men.
Right.
It's a very strange situation that we've got now.
Yeah, they mailed them their toenail clippings and things, from what I can see. Is that
well, absolutely. I mean, the worst example, the famous one is gamer girl bathwater. It's absolutely disgusting. But there were guys prepared to buy it. I mean, and then you've got the whole OnlyFans thing, you know. I mean, it's a very strange situation where, and, you know, this is the end result of feminism. This is the perverse, surprising end result. Well, maybe not surprising to some people. End result of feminism is that women become, well, whores, but yet they're whores without actually having sex. They're not giving sex. It's they're giving the endless promise. Or maybe if you play your cards right, you know, it's this endless tease, and then the men are paying for this endless tease, and the simulation, the imitation of a relationship. I mean, it's just so absolutely unhealthy. I mean, I'll tell you what, I don't know how I would reform the universities, but if I did have the power to do that, namely if I were, you know, the emperor, I think the very first thing that I would do is ban OnlyFans.
Oh, fuck yeah, for sure.
I would just abolish that fucking cesspit of a website. Yeah. I think it's absolutely toxic.
Like you say, they're not whores because they're not having sex, but if you get up and you're playing with yourself on a camera, you know, that's pretty whorish.
Well, exactly. I did use the word whore. I'm just saying, the sort of irony of it is that they're whores without actually having sex with their clients. You know, there's no actual. It's all on screen. You know,
this is when it feels like a an unstoppable blossoming of various awful situations, one thing leading into another unstoppably in that sort of Spenglerian way. You wonder, like, how can this cavalcade ever cease without, like, taking it out of the root, without it self imploding and lighting itself on fire or something? Like, how can you? You know, a fundamental break between the sexes and the relations, and forget about fertility. We'll be lucky if we don't take the kids we've already had and, like, castrate them all, you know, let alone worrying about future generations. The one we have is in jeopardy of being, like, confused and, like, you know, mutilating themselves. It's so bad.
I mean, I've talked about this about my own experience of the 90s, growing up then, going through adolescence in the 90s, even then, it was confusing enough. You know, it was the signals were mixed enough. There was a lack of imperatives. They didn't say, you are a man, therefore you are male, therefore you should become a man, and this is what a man does, this is how a man is. Or to the extent that they did do that, it was a negative notion of manhood. And so it was, you know, it was misleading enough then, and that's 30 years ago. And you know, the Zoomers have gone through and are going through now, and what Gen Alpha will go through, I can't even imagine how confusing it must be. And of course, they're explicitly pushing the trans thing on to young people in a very obvious way. I mean, they're not even ashamed of it. You know, it's not even subtle. This is something that does surprise me, is how it's just how explicit it is. I mean, there's no attempt to talk it down. Even they're quite open that a huge percentage of the population are trans and they just don't know it, and that's always been the case. And now we've got a more open society, so that's why a ridiculous percentage of the Zoomers are coming out as non-binary, gender fluid, God knows what, trans. But they're pushing it. You know, see, that's the thing, that they're pushing it. It's even being basically advertised, promoted. It's absolutely being promoted, just by being talked about, and especially by being talked about as something a bit verboten, a bit edgy, a bit something that will annoy your parents, basically something that will baffle your parents. Yeah. Well, I mean, adolescents love anything that will enable them to baffle their parents. I mean, it's a thing. It shouldn't be, but it is. So it's just the result is so obvious. You know, the inevitable result is so obvious. Basically, you're subverting massive numbers of very vulnerable young people. And the other thing that's amazing about it is the quite explicit link with paedophilia. I mean, this is what I always thought. The left won't go that far. They won't try to legitimize paedophilia because that's just so extreme that parents simply won't put up with it. They simply won't tolerate that. But what they've done is they've very cleverly linked they've done it via the trans thing. So you have to approve of an 8-year-old boy scantily clad dancing in a sexual manner for gay men. You have to approve of that, because if you don't, you're transphobic, and you don't want to be transphobic. So you have to approve of it, even though that means basically approving of paedophilia.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the first thing I remember seeing that put me over the edge and maybe into one of these right-wing creatures, I think, forever. It was on, I think it was back in the Facebook days. Yeah, I was seeing some little boy, a young boy twerking at a gay pride thing. Like a young kid, wind makeup and stuff.
Yeah, I think that was Desmond is Amazing, who was a boy. Because that was actually quite a long time ago now. That was like 2015.
It could be.
I think it was as far back as that. But I mean,
I remember thinking right away, like, okay, that's it. I'm against them forever.
Oh, absolutely.
So, I'm done.
Yeah. Absolutely. When I saw that, it was like, okay, whatever doubts I have about the minutiae of being called right-wing, right-wing ideology, this or that brand of right-wing ideology, whatever doubts I have, I am absolutely opposed to this thing.
Yeah.
There's just no question that, yeah. I mean, if the only way to fight against this, drag queen story hour, is to be right wing, then fuck it, I am right wing.
Yeah.
Because in some ways I'm still a liberal at heart. I think my nature is fairly liberal. But but that is
we're not conservatives. We're not conservatives, that's for sure. I never were. I mean, I don't think you are. I wouldn't be calling myself that. I never did. Something else.
But that, I mean, Drag Queen Story Hour, Desmond is Amazing, the drag kids, is just absolute. I mean, it's not just egregious. It's not just wrong. It's demonic. Yeah. It's satanic.
It was, yeah. And that's been going on. That was, so you're right. That was 2015. So that's like, you know, we're emerging on that being a decade old, and nothing, there was nothing rose up to do away with it, you know, which is really pathetic and terrible. And it's only gotten worse and more of it.
Yeah.
You know, you think the average person would be a little bit more, you know, incensed by that one. Maybe they just simply didn't see it, I guess. They don't know.
Well, as I said, it's covered by the trans thing. You can't oppose it without being transphobic.
Right.
And you know, in a sane society, nobody would give a shit about such things, such labels. It would be, you call me whatever the fuck you like, you're not doing that to my kid. You know, don't throw whatever words you want at me. You are not doing that to my child. My child is not going to be exposed to this fucking poison at your school. I don't care what you call me. Now, that would be a sane society. But in a sane society, a father would get away with saying that. In our society, a father who said that would find himself in court, and possibly, and this is the really sick thing, and you've seen this in Canada for sure, and I think in other countries as well, where they actually take a child away from his or her parents because the parents aren't amenable to this. So, I mean, that is, I mean, fuck.
That's how things are. That's how you know things are so bad that it doesn't really deserve to continue, that we ourselves have become a problem.
Exactly. You know, does this, I mean, how can you call this a civilization? How can you call this a culture?
If no, we can't. That's
what it's doing, you know, taking kids away from their parents because the state, the party, whatever, wants to inveigle that child into cutting their genitals off. I mean, this is absolutely satanic. And I think this is why I find it easy, or relatively easy, to believe in the Pizzagate thing. Because, and I'm not saying it's definitely true, but I think it is.
I didn't see anything too unbelievable about it at the time. I mean, it was, you know, crazy. But then when you looked into some of the things, there was definitely something weird going on there. And then soon, this is what I hate. Is it Twitter that does this, or just the mob in general? It's like, if something becomes a thing, it's very easy for the overall mob or the left or whatever to twist it and make it into something unspeakable and goofy and wrong. They did this with the term alt-right. They did it with the term Pizzagate. You know what I mean? They take something that's sort of fine and explain something. And it's, you know, you may agree or disagree, but they somehow make it in the average guy a cringe thing to even consider. I don't know how they
absolutely
do it.
Yeah. It's just the sheer power of the media. They redefine a term so that it now means, it used to mean ABC, it now means XYZ. And you can do that just with, you know, the sheer repetitive power of the media, or the repetitional power of the media. You can do that quite easily.
Because I felt the same about that Pizzagate thing. I felt it was possible. I mean, I saw some things were reaching, but there were some things that were very, definitely very strange. And
I mean, you've only got to look at the photos of John Podesta's house.
Yeah, you
know, that guy is. There's something very, very strange going on.
And they hired him back. They hired him back into the administration recently.
Yes,
that's unbelievable.
The stuff with the Biden administration. I mean, it's like one incredible thing after another. You know, whether it's Biden's laptop, his dementia, the blatant corruption, the lying, the army guarding him on the inauguration day, the obviously fraudulent election. I mean, where would you even begin?
It's an insane menagerie of like freaks, like a carnival show of fucking freaks and retards like I've never seen. Like,
absolutely. And then you've got the trans admirals and the weirdo who's in charge of the toxic waste or the nuclear, whatever it is. I mean, it's like we've gone far beyond the point of satire. It's like a surreal farcical comedy, which isn't even attempting to be realistic. You know, it's not even
the only thing he's missing at this point. The only thing he's missing is to have one of those Down syndrome drag people like in high office somewhere. Maybe,
you know, that was another thing. I actually find that very disturbing. The drag queen, the Down syndrome drag queen stuff. I mean, that is, again, whoever is involved in that should be in prison.
who's putting that in their head and dressing them up? Who's doing that?
You know, again, a sane society would utterly condemn anyone inveigling Down syndrome people into that. I mean, that would be regarded
sexualizing them to begin with is insane. Sexualizing them at all to begin with, let alone putting them in a dress and makeup and like,
of course.
What the fuck? Of course.
I mean, again, I don't want to Fed post. I just think that the people, you know, in a sane society, the people who did that would be, after due process and, you know, court of law and all that, they would be punished. In, you know, the legal above board and all that. I just think it's sick. It's absolutely sick to have a vulnerable person and to inveigle them into doing that is, oh my God, this is awful. Absolutely awful. Oh, fuck.
I mean, it's our usual bemoaning of things. Like,
oh, yeah. Well, I haven't even answered how I would fix universities, but if we want to circle back to that. Yeah. I mean, you know, I have thought about this. Because I do think that, yeah, obviously the media is very important in how a society goes, what it believes and all that. But the other extremely important thing is the schools, the education system. But that is fed by the teacher training colleges. So I think one of the first things you'd have to take over is the teacher training colleges. The trouble is that in order to do that, well, the media would immediately attack you for doing that. So you'd have to shut down the media or something like that. And in order to do that, you would need a vastly expanded army and police force. And in order to do that properly, you'd have to vet everyone in positions of authority in the police and army. And probably it would mean bringing some crusty old types out of retirement. I mean, you would have to be very careful about this because it could backfire at each stage. It could backfire disastrously if you didn't do it, if you didn't protect against that.
Doesn't feel like something is possible at all, really, does it?
No, I mean, I think it's not going to happen. And I simply think that our society is going to fall apart. And I mean, you know, it's a case of hoping that it happens quickly and it doesn't take long for it to be reformed in some way. I mean, this is sort of Gandalf and Frodo territory, really, where you're saying, I wish I didn't have to live through this, but we don't have the choice, you know?
Oh, exactly. Yeah. And I mean, we're just, yeah, and we're going to be like, it'll probably take just so long that we'll be kind of like old and infirmed and like not able to, even though we've been fully aware of it for like, you know, like 10 years at this point or longer. By then, even more, 2030, we'll be like just not able to do what we could have once done in terms of trying to survive. And
no, I mean, it's something I can imagine that I'll be too old to do much. So basically, it'll be a matter of surviving it. So I can imagine people, including myself, retreating to the Highlands or something like that, the Scottish Highlands or remote near Wales, something like that. I don't know. It depends when it happens.
Or what happens. I mean, what is
going to happen? Or what happened? We don't know.
We got war started, like a war in Europe, basically, more or less.
I mean, I think that France is going to be the first one, the first country to go in that regard. Because, I mean, I put up a poll on Telegram a few days ago asking this question, of which Europe, I echoed it from someone else. Someone else had created this poll. And the winner by a long shot was France. Okay. And hold on a second, I'll tell you
what are the reasons?
People just said that the French are more, what's the word? Excitable sort of people. They're more they're more rebellious.
Right.
I mean that was 54% of people said France. This in second place was America with 17%.
Right.
So the vast majority, 54%, is by far the winner there. And I agree. I've said for some time, I think it will either be Sweden or France. And Sweden is actually in third place here.
A place that will rise up and take itself back, you mean, or just collapse?
Both. The question on the poll was, which Western country will be the first to devolve into inter-ethnic civil war? And I do think that France is the Swedes. You know, the thing is the Swedes are such a strange are difficult people to characterize, because on the one hand, they're the laughable Swedish cuck, but on the other hand, they're pretty fucking beast.
Can be, yeah.
I mean, they've got loads of, like, there's a big hunting culture there, for example. And then they're, I used to know much more about Sweden than I do now, but they're not as, I mean, it's not as clear cut as people think. You know, it's not like they're all just sort of wandering around humming ABBA songs. You know, they're actually quite, there is an edge to the Swedish people, the Swedish psyche, if you like.
Yeah. Seems like the men are more based, and like, but the women are really more.
Oh, absolutely! I would expect that the women are the sort of epitome of dreamy headedness, you know, sort of alien, yeah. Nordic dreamy headedness. I would think.
Yeah, and just like very, very arrogant in their power, their present feminist power, and so.
Well, I mean, yeah, but so I would say that France will be the first one, and I think that in turn will probably rupture its relationship with Germany, which, and that will probably cause the dissolution of the EU. I mean, all of this, and then of course all the other countries would be free to do whatever they wanted to some extent, but all of this hinges on the condition of America, right? Because I honestly believe that, like, look at the Biden administration. You know, I believe that they are insane enough that they would nuke a European country.
Yeah, they would probably. Yeah,
I mean, if they thought like Denmark is in danger of becoming a fascist dictatorship or a right wing traditionalist perennialist dictatorship, something like that, Christian nationalist dictatorship. It's a real threat to our democracy, then they would nuke it. I think they would. And I think if Hillary Clinton were a president, I've said the same about her, that I firmly believe that she would nuke a European country.
That would really put things well over the edge in every place around the world, though, as well. America would then be, you know, I mean, they are crazy enough to do that. You're right. But that would be the point. They've gone over the line into, they're well into total insanity now, but how can I say it? They're beyond the point of holding anything together anywhere and around the world, I think. And the level of chaos would just increase exponentially. And even when you say the scenario, say, of France, I try to imagine a scenario where you got inter-ethnic conflict and a place where all the ethnicities are spread out within each city, and enormous numbers of Europeans would even side against their own Europeans. Like, that wouldn't, it's not going to be an easy...
Well, but would Europeans fight against Europeans, though?
You mean, would I believe like hard leftist French would join? And
oh,
fight against...
oh, I see what you mean. Yes. Antifa. Yes, yeah. You're right. Well, Antifa, but the thing about Antifa is, they're ultimately a feminine thing. They're ultimately a feminine force, even if they, you know, they're violent, and I'm sure that hurts just as much. From an Antifa fist as from any other fist, to be punched in the face by Antifa. But nonetheless, it's still a feminine force. And I'm certain that it could be brought under control in short order by a male countervailing force. And I think it would be. Antifa are ultimately a tool of the establishment, right? And if they don't have establishment backing, they're absolutely fucked. Because what they are is a bunch of middle-class posers and junkies and Jewish adventurers. And that's what Antifa is.
It's not just Antifa. We got all the gays and the trannies and the people who are invested in an invisible progressive world that will vanish before their eyes. Like what
absolutely. But what are the gays and the trannies going to do? I mean,
I don't know. They'll be there. There'll be lots of them. There'll be more than ever by the time it happens. There'll be people who are
enough to fill
invested,
a disco.
Invested in. it'd be difficult to see where the lines will be drawn or what exactly would happen, other than an increase in chaos, in my mind, random violence. And so many people are also intermarried into other ethnicities now. And
yes, I agree. And that is I don't think that the gays and the trannies would be a much of a problem if you were trying to take over a country. I don't think that they would pose a threat or whatever. There would be some, and I dare say that there'd be some that went in for, you know, crazy stuff, But in general, I think they're a very weak group. So that's my opinion. I might be wrong, but that's my opinion. As you say, intermixing with, I mean, that's a huge problem. And this is why it's encouraged so much, because who wants to upset their cousin who's married to a black guy or whatever, you know, or an Indian, or my cousin who's got an East Asian bride, you know, whatever. The more families that are like that, the fewer families will be able to wholeheartedly defend their country from you know, mass immigration or whatever.
Because this is my fear on that.
Yeah,
it's just that the lines are divided. It's not clear at all. They go right down through the cities, through the villages, and even into homes and families. There's dividing lines. And it's just, I have a hard time in mind visualizing this, the place rising up in an obvious one side or the other type conflict.
I agree. And I think this is why they encourage so much racism. One of the reasons is that, I mean, there are multiple reasons, but one of them is that it implicates every family. Basically, every person will know someone, either their friend or a relative, who's in a mixed race relationship, has mixed race kids. Yeah. That's one of the reasons. It paralyzes it stunts the possibility for people to become, you know, racially conscious, as it were. But I think that all of this really depends on comfort going away. I've said this for years, and I still believe it now, that as long as people are comfortable, they will find a way to rationalize putting up with anything. Possibly, even including Drag Queen Story Hour. We know that now. You know, they will put up with that. Incredibly, they actually will put up with that. But if the comfort goes, this is a question that I've been pondering a lot recently. You know, can you have, because now the comfort does look like it's about to go, you know, it looks like it's going to evaporate. And so can you have, you know, the current woke politics, which is, you know, COVID, Ukraine, climate change, trans, feminism, multiculturalism, you know, diversity, anti-male, anti-white, can you have all of that? Can you have a public going along with all of that while the public are freezing cold, starving, no prospects for their life, their future? Granny died last week, preventably. You know, this kind of stuff is real, though. I mean, it's funny to say granny, but but the reality of it would be awful. You know, the reality of it would be harrowing. If that's what the public are enduring, will they still put up with the wokery? Now, there are two ways that I can see this going. The first is the obvious one, that no, they just won't put up with it. They'll rebel. Like, it's too much to ask of them.
Yeah.
But the other path is completely opposite, which is, yes, they will put up with it because they're like the population in 1984, where life is suffering. They're constantly in a state of suffering, and that makes them weak and malleable.
So they're so cucked now that they have reached a level of absolute slavery that they only understand suffering, and they would make
is that they're suffering because of the deprivation, because of the energy crisis, that kind of stuff. So what I'm saying is that might actually increase their devotion to the woke ideology.
It could, I guess. Who knows what they are now? They seem to be something slightly less than human already to me. I know that sounds terrible, but...
Well, that was something I did actually want to ask you about, is your use of the term normals. And I like this term. I mean, first of all, I want to preface this by saying, I think there's a danger, and I've said this before, there's a danger in basking in being an outsider. There's a danger in having contempt for the conformist, having contempt for the normal, the average, because most people are like that, and you don't want to. There's a danger in setting yourself above them. There are multiple dangers in setting yourself above them. And yet, especially when the norms that they're adhering to are causing society to fall apart, it's inevitable that you will see yourself as above them in at least one sense. You know, I mean, I know that the average guy who believes in all the fashionable politics of the day will have abilities and tendencies which I don't have. You know, he will be maybe self-disciplined. He might be good at organizing. He might be good. Well, I'm pretty good at organizing, but whatever. He might be good at maths. He might be more generous than I am. Whatever. He might, you know, be a real family man, and he's great, and everyone loves him. Whatever.
Yeah.
He's great guy. So he's a swell guy. So I'm fully aware of this. You know, I know my own flaws, and you know, I don't think that I'm fantastic. But I will confess that in some sense, I do feel superior to. And it's not even that I want to. See, this is the thing. I'm confident enough in my own abilities and whatever. I don't need to puff myself up like I'm superior to the average person.
Yeah.
But I just do think that I'm better than them. I'm sorry, but I just do, in this sense, in this one sense, I am. I do think I'm better than them.
Yeah, and, see, I wouldn't even frame it that way at all, but yeah. Go on.
See, it's horrible because you think, what's the point of even saying this? But the thing is, it has to be said. One has to address this relationship that one has as an outsider, as a nonconformist, with the conformists.
Mm-hmm.
You have to think about it.
Yeah.
And I think that you're going to inevitably reach the conclusion that it, just in your ability to stray from the norm intelligently, you are superior to those who do not have that ability.
Yeah, it's a weird gift that tortures you. It's
it is. It is actually, because you end up like the tortured artist. Like, I've got this gift, but oh, it's a curse.
But everyone hates me.
It is. That's the thing. It bloody well is a curse. You know, this is why people have the moral dilemma about red pilling people. You know, you might be helping them, but you may also be. Life, you know.
I felt bad about some of that because I have done that, and I think, oh, am I really?
So, would you? So, the reason that was just a preface to asking you the question. So, I'm sorry about the length.
All right. What's the question?
So the question is, well, what do you think about this? And specifically, your use of the term normal as a noun. Like you'll talk about normals and so
yes. On. I just liked for some reason instead of normie, I turned to saying normal because it sounds more derogatory somehow, and I just enjoyed that.
I thought so. I thought that was it.
Yeah, I enjoy making up words, and yes, I am disgusted by the let's say the average guy, but I wouldn't say it. I wouldn't even begin to frame it in as you were saying. Ultimately, I would not frame it in a case of superior. And I wouldn't even say that because, as you say, they will be better than us at other things. And it's just a matter of difference. It's a divide between the type of people. And, you know, they don't, a lot of it is to do in their case, I think more and more to do with fear and cowardice as well. Like a lot of them there must be a percentage of them at least as well that have an awareness of what they're doing and what's going on. Too scared to act. And maybe in some ways, maybe they're smarter than us to do so in some ways. Maybe we're foolish to even open our mouths. The smart move would be to realize if everything we're saying here, our conclusion just recently was that it's all hopeless, it's all going to collapse. What can we do? You know, the smart move in that case would be to say nothing about it and survive it incognito, probably.
Even though that sounds maybe powerful. they're having the last laugh, and we're actually a pair of fucking fools.
Well, but a huge percentage of them are just idiots. Let's face it; they're just kind of like. People that absolutely believe what they're told. They're born to be slaves from what I can see. It's not just even to do with politics. It's people, I feel harassed by these people my entire life just from, you know, musical interest or silly things like this, like, you know, just artistic stuff. I feel like there's been a type of person that's very prevalent. Most people, you know, I have to live with them. They're your people. You have to love them in a way, but you know, you can also show disdain and mock them because they deserve it really. And you don't. I wouldn't say superior, inferior, but I would say I do feel free to mock them and sort of. I feel a disgust more and more with them, and I'm trying not to. I'm trying not to actually. Recently, I think I can't go on about this so much all the time, even though I feel it and I feel affected by it. I've got to like not harass them so much.
The way you talk about it,
also with women. Let me just say this because I do this a lot. I've harassed fucking feminists, women, and normal to people. And I just go on and on about it. I think, like, am I saying this again? Am I, why can't I just leave them alone for 5 minutes? Like, why must I go on and on about it? And I berate myself over it, but then I can't help it. Then I read another headline or I see something else. I'm just like, oh, I've got to say something more about it. And I just can't help it. But I would say that I believe in deep tradition. I believe in that the better kind of society would be something closer to the Roman society or the, you know, even say the early British Empire or again, the Egyptian or older, that they had that the natural ideas of hierarchy with natural values, which naturally separate things like gender and keep them organized, as well as keep fundamental values in place, which keep things working in their clockwork, which generally follow a hierarchy. There's always got to be a hierarchy. Whenever something tries to dismantle a hierarchy, it's just going to replace it with another hierarchy and just change the names of all the king and the serfs will just be called something else. They'll be the, you know, the Politburo, the commissars, and down to the whatever, the comrades, right? You can never, ever change that. So if you're open and willing to accept that, this is the other thing I think about, say, industrialized society as well. If you can have these industrial technology things. We were talking earlier about technology and how its effect upon everything. You can have, I think, technology and, you know, the internet, you can say, is turning people into trannies and things, but it's all to do with our use of it and our outlook from the onset, which is that every bit of technology is, as you were saying earlier, another road to luxury and comfort. Which is completely, if we just had more reversed ourselves back into classical values, which we're not going to until things collapse. But I mean, if we could, you would use technology heroically as part in the hierarchy, a natural hierarchy of systems, and not as a broad consumer democratic way to give everybody luxury, when in fact, everybody should be learning to be self-sufficient as possible all the time. And every person should, if we cared about people, even if we cared about the normies that I have so much disdain for, and the national serfs, we would teach them self-sufficiency, and they would know how to fix their own computers and their own robots, and they would be able to. And we wouldn't use technology for these simple consumer type stuff. It would just be used for like high space exploration and crazy experiments at the top.
I was going to say
a pagan space emperor.
In a lot of the images that you share are of sort of 1970s science fiction images, where it's a man being heroic in a space rocket or on a moon station, a moon base, that kind of thing. And they're wonderful images. I've actually created a subfolder within my image folder of 1970s sci-fi images, and a lot of them come from your channel. Because they're lovely. They're really, it's very, very nice. And it's so interesting because you realize this is a notion of, well, it's a notion of exploration that we don't quite have nowadays.
We had this notion. We had this idea.
But it's married to a notion of masculinity, which we definitely don't have nowadays.
No. Definitely feminism tore apart. I know feminism was imposed by the rootless cosmopolitans, etc., but as a force on its own, it tore apart the fabric of everything utterly, I think. That's why the pernicious nature...
One of my earliest videos was actually called How Feminism Killed the Space Age. It was one of my early... It was like one of the first sort of few dozen that I made many in that first month, the January, and I'm pretty sure that one of them was that one. And... It caused a bit of a stir because I think the title was maybe a bit misleading. But it was basically this point that feminism doesn't really have a use. Well, basically, not just feminism, but female nature doesn't really have a use for something like space exploration because it's a very male thing. I don't want to go into that because it's a big tangent, but I was just mentioning it now because it linked with what you were just saying, that these images of the of space, the sci-fi images from the 70s, feminism just cannot tolerate that kind of stuff. It just has no time for it. This is a way in which feminism really does spring from female nature, because I think female nature doesn't have any time for stuff like space exploration, space travel, and heroic deeds. It's just not there. It just doesn't figure in female nature, really.
No, there's no limit to luxury in a feminine view of the world. I don't think they really consider. They can't even conceive that you would. Why would you limit luxury? Why would you put less than 10 pillows in the bed or whatever? You know.
Yeah, I suppose so. But the other thing I was going to mention, based on that, is that, as you say about technology, that a better society might well have a notion of technology as something that is necessary at the extremes, mm-hmm. but sort of disgusting in at the center. So in the center of life. So in normal,
mundane life,
it would be sort of seen as a bit disgusting to use.
I don't know about technology. Disgusting. Let me just correct that. I would just say, as long as there's a strong value of self-sufficiency, understanding nature, being in tune with nature, and being able to do everything for yourself, being a survivalist, man of the woods, everyone's trained to be that. But at the same time, you have a high technology society, you know what I mean? So that, but it's used hierarchically. You know, if it's not all just used for consumer goods, and we're not just inventing new ways to jerk off online or whatever, right?
It comes back to that, doesn't it? That you don't want technology to just be a way for us to jerk off. And jerk off could mean different things, like more ways to do mundane, low grade stuff that we do anyway, and that we would do anyway, even without the technology.
Increasing luxury too, and when we should be at war with luxury, especially at the root of the common man level. Each man should be trained to be as hard as he can, as he used to try to be, to be a hard case and to be self sufficient, to survive on his own.
Well, this is like the Robert Heinlein quote that a man should be able to do. You know, in fact, I'll find it in a minute.
Like, men used to know how to take apart their car, and you see pictures again in the '70s of guys completely taking apart their car in the street and putting it back together and something. You know, they would know the mechanics of everything. They would learn it.
Yeah. Of course, that's one of the problems of high technology, is that it becomes too sophisticated for any human being to know how to fix it.
But not necessarily. That's not, you know, that's the attitude. That again is the attitude where it's always too much. We need a company to oversee this for us, and we need to have someone come around to fix the car and change my tire for me, kind of thing. Like, there should be at least a certain level of everyone understanding the basics. This was, by the way, a roundabout way of me saying that the average guy that so plagues me with their Muzak taste and their basic leftism, and they're going along with everything they're fed, is a lot of them are basically like serfs genetically designed to be a serf class, probably, and just do what they're told.
In which case, can you make a hero out of a serf?
You probably can, and you don't have. Yeah, if you train them, if they were trained right, they wouldn't necessarily be as bad as they are. People were not. It seemed to me that in the past, people were not this. You know, people would.
Yeah, there does seem to be a cultural component to this, because I don't believe that the NPC was such a thing in the past. Even if they did go along with what the powerful said, I think they did grumble about it. Whereas now, the difference now is that they're full-throated in their devotion to whatever the powerful decree.
See, this is another thing I waffle on sometimes. I wonder, and I know most people do not agree with me, that I'd say everybody says it's obviously a top-down thing. And it is, undeniably. Sometimes, though, I feel like it's sometimes a bottom-up thing in some ways, and that, you know, the NPC is getting the world exactly that he wants. And he is sort of sometimes calling the shots a little bit, but maybe that's wrong. I don't know.
Let me read this quote from Heinlein and just ask you what you think about it. A human being should be able to change a diaper, plan an invasion, butcher a hog, con a ship. That means, I think, reconnaissance, something like that. Design a building, write a sonnet, balance accounts, build a wall, set a bone, comfort the dying, take orders, give orders, cooperate, act alone, solve equations, analyze a new problem, pitch manure, program a computer, cook a tasty meal, fight efficiently, and die gallantly. Specialization is for insects.
Yes, I totally agree. I remember you posting that before. Although I would add the caveat, it should be a man, not just a human being. Probably, I mean, it's good for women to know as many of those things as they can as well, but you wouldn't really expect that of them.
Yeah, whereas a woman would tend to find it extremely arousing if a guy could do all of those things. Let's be honest. I mean, yes. I hope that's not too misogynistic of me, but I think I think it's true. Whereas a guy, you know, I mean, I have to say, I'm just generally impressed by ability. You know, I think it's impressive. And this goes for men and women. I admire people who are self-sufficient, and the more self-sufficient they are, the more impressive I find them. Partly because I'm not like that. You know, I know I'm aware of my own shortcomings in these fields. So whenever I see someone who can do these, I think that's amazing. You know, and in women, I find it quite sexy.
What if they have many abilities?
Yeah.
Do you? Well, that's interesting.
Well, probably it's a genetic thing because it's signaling that, you know, psychologically, I'm registering that these are good genes, you know?
Yeah, probably right. Yeah.
I just think so. This is my part of my wacky theory. It actually just gets wackier from here is that if you have a proper strata to society, we have proper castes once more. Just a caste with social mobility, but castes nonetheless, right? And you save your industrial higher technology, it's kept towards the top strata of society. And at the lower strata, you're doing your best to keep a garden earth and to keep everyone self-sufficient. And in fact, maybe even like going so far as to, you know, crazy things like people should use horses more again instead of cars.
This is a thing, and I've seen this in science fiction from the late and mid 20th century, this concept that we're going to end up banning high technologies and deliberately imposing limitations on the population, because otherwise, well, we'll head into the dystopia that we're in right now, you know, where life is basically meaningless because there's just no struggle to survive. There's no struggle.
Life isn't meaningless. We have great meaning. See, you and I have this incredible omnipotent enemy that's going to destroy us, of course, but
yeah, you and I have meaning, but I mean, yeah, sure. But I think a lot of people, I mean, it's always a danger to talk about other people in opposition to oneself. Right. I think the absence of religion leaves a vacuum. The absence of empire leaves a vacuum. The absence of nation leaves a vacuum. The absence of ethnic, racial, group identity leaves a vacuum. And it would be, it just in general, I think that people would find some kind of raison d'etre if they did not have luxury amidst all of that vacuum. You know, I think they would, if they had to actually deal with it, I think you would probably get more fully developed people. I mean, it's not for nothing that the millennial generation are famous. And in some ways, I think I do embody this. They're famous as a sort of infantilized, underdeveloped generation, but partly because they haven't been tested in the ways that previous generations were. And I think part of it is that life has been too comfortable.
Well, in any possible scenario, in any way you can do anything, there's always pros and cons, let's say. So, and yes, their lives have been too comfortable to date. And maybe they're going to get a bit more difficult now. What can you say in the positive? This business with the internet is a very strange thing. As you say, you see it as overall negative. I still don't see it as an overall complete negative.
But it's the normies. Again, you see, I think in all things you have, and this is the danger because it sounds like vanity. Because obviously I see myself, I mean, you know, I'll admit it, I see myself as above the average in terms of intellect and curiosity. Having admitted that, I think that you have to distinguish between the rabble and the others. Because to treat them as the same is just crazy. For example, intelligent, inquisitive people have a use for the internet that is laudable.
Yeah.
The rabble don't. You know, what they use the internet for is they look up what David Beckham is doing this week, what Brad Pitt is wearing this week, what Madonna, who Madonna has shagged this week. You know, just absolute nonsense. Let's not get into that. The point is that the rabble will use the high technology. They will use it for absolute garbage.
For new ways to jerk off, basically, yeah. But
yeah,
you have to admit that amongst a certain, say, even a lot of those crazy people on social media that we were bitching about earlier, like, a lot of them have been exposed to a variety of ideas, opinions, and would have a certain knowledge of things beyond your typical person like them would have had in the past. You can say that much, even though they might be misguided and utterly screwed and, you know, hopeless. They, in the very least, they have a wide variety of opinion contained within themselves and exposure to ideas that, you know, while a lot of them are crazy and of not much value, more so than you would have seen in the past. So more people have a more relative opinion than ever, I would say.
Well, exactly. I wonder what it is worth. You know, I think that most people just don't have a use for this stuff. I mean, most people don't have a use for freedom of speech because they've got nothing to say.
Yeah, but see, I have a certain consequentialist view of things. It's to do with I have reached a certain kind of religious belief myself. So I do kind of believe in fate and destiny. So when things are happening, I see it as they were meant to happen. And there's not much, if it's happening in a fashion that you can certainly do nothing about, then it's going to continue to happen and evolve into something you didn't expect. And, you know, whatever cultural things are happening en masse, and we have so little power to control them, they have a kind of life of their own. Certain people, even the people that do claim to control them or have set things in motion, let's say, I think these things go well beyond their power to control, like, quite quickly. It's like any kind of evolution in life. It kind of goes in its own direction, and it always winds up where you would not expect.
No shit. I mean, I didn't think that we would be living in, you know, 1980s cyberpunk dystopia. But that seems to be pretty much where we've ended up.
Only with less lasers and less androids and just kind of...
and more trannies.
More trannies.
Yeah, but with all the surveillance, all the corporate takeover of government, all of the technology, all of that.
Well, government itself, law and government is becoming more and more of a joke, to the average person. You can say that much, I think.
Well, yeah. I mean, the Tyrell Corporation, OCP.
Mm.
I mean, I don't really see. I'm not sure how distant we are from those things now. Did the Tyrell Corporation have more power and autonomy than Google has today? I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Yeah.
Not at all.
If anything, I would say that Google has more power and autonomy than the Tyrell Corporation. And then OCP, that's maybe a different matter, because as far as I know, private corporations aren't taking over the police department. But yeah, it's not yet, at least. But yeah, I think that it's a strange thing. But the point you were making was that, well, everything happens for a reason. And as what are you saying, that we're sort of meant to be in this condition that we're in?
Well, in a sense, if it seems inevitable, if it strikes me as something that's completely... you know, you can't do anything much about, then I chalk it up as fate and meant to be, and it'll change. I know that things will change as well. And in everything, there's a plus and a minus. Things are overall negative and bad. We're definitely in a point in this perennial cycle that's on the downward trajectory. As long as we don't, funnily enough, as people who, like you and I, who are fond of our past and reminiscing, we must not be too precious about it and be willing to see the good in what we can still find around us.
It's true.
You can't hold on to it, because all these things are held and will, like, so many things will be lost. Like, I'm obviously a fan of traditional art, and you know, I expect a lot of these. I'm sure at some point, like the Louvre will go up in flames or some horrible thing, you know. I expect great loss, let's say, and I try not to be precious about it, because if it happens, that's what was meant to happen. If, you know, you do your best to prevent bad things from happening, but if something's faded, if we are, you know, if perennialism is true, as it seems to me to have some truth to it, then you just have to go through these cycles. It's like things are born and die, and, you know, life wants to change. Life wants a new generation, and it wants change. So we got some bad things happening for sure. We're on the way down.
I agree. I mean, I think that when I first got into this kind of thing, I called myself I sort of adopted the label paleocon, then reactionary. Right. And reactionary, I guess, is still applicable, but my approach is different now. You know, I used to lament decline an awful lot, an awful lot. And eventually I had to stop it because it was just too depressing. You know, it was just draining me. And after that, I started to think about it and I realized it was really wrong of me to be in that habit of lamenting decline because it's unhealthy, you know?
Yeah.
It's like lamenting that a friend has cancer. At some point, you've just got to make peace with it and accept it.
Yeah, it's even like, it's like things change anyways. It's like I moved here to this other country and I always think, oh, I wish I was back in my hometown or whatever. But if I go back to my hometown, I can see, you know, as Shakespeare said, the past is a foreign country. It's like, it's not what it was anymore either. So you cannot hang on to these things.
Well, indeed, there's a really nice quote to that effect that, God, what was it? It was something about a river.
Oh, Heraclitus?
Yeah, or there's another one actually where a man it can never be
step in the same river twice.
That's it, exactly. Yes, exactly. And I really liked that because indeed, you know, the past is majestic and all that in one's mind, but in truth, if you were able to step back into it, you would not be the person that you were then.
Yeah.
And, you know, especially childhood, obviously, because you're just not that kid anymore. so it would be useless.
Yeah. So our powers then, if we have powers above the normies, it is in a certain astuteness of noticing what is important in historic or natural values that might be considered eternal, that must be clung to and applied to whatever new thing comes along somehow. And all that's going to happen probably in the short term is we're going to form little gangs and try to survive in our own weird little gangs in a weird kind of bizarre, I don't know.
Just to pick up on that, would you say that a characteristic of the normie or the, I'm thinking this is perhaps specifically refers to the sort of bug man, the consume product, get excited. Would you say that a characteristic of them is that they are stunted and they're sort of locked in a nostalgia for childhood, whereas a more rounded person is, well, it has the attitude that you're talking about, where you sort of accept that you can never go back.
It's hard to say. See, this is part of my frustration with the normal, that brings me back to considering them all the time and making me give out about them perhaps too much, like I'm lamenting. But is that they confound me. What they are thinking is a thing of great curiosity to me. I really am fascinated. I'm taken by trying to discover what they are saying. What are they hiding? Do they really believe what they're saying? And if they do, how can they? And it's really confounding. I really don't get it. A lot of it is too with corporate culture. Like bugmen are really in the corporate culture. That's a whole other kind of pseudo psychotic frame of mind that can take over people. It seems like, you know, the general unquestioning following of the liberal media. Without ever any self-doubt, even when they see some of these horrendous things that are going on, like, I don't understand, like, and we're talking about people like in my immediate family and everything else. So I still don't understand. I can't claim to understand, but I mean, you're just trying to theorize as well anyways, but I don't know. It's very hard for me to say clearly. And I'm always trying to
see, you could say that the NPC is someone locked in the state of a childlike state of being dependent on what his parents tell him.
So do you think then that they're so scared of what it means to not, if their values aren't true, that they just cannot begin to even conceive it? Is it like a cowardice?
I definitely think that, because it's such a head fuck and it is terrifying. I mean, you and I have both undergone this process that we call, you know, becoming red pilled in differs from one person to the next.
I didn't find it terrifying. I found it interesting. I don't remember being scared. I remember being kind of I remember just being thrilled, in fact.
Thrilled. Yeah.
I
was never, I wouldn't say it was terrifying, but it was a bit troubling. It's like, oh shit. So that's isn't true either. it's a bit of a bummer. And
I guess it's probably,
but I would say, not to be too self-aggrandizing of the two of us, but I would say that our intellectual curiosity sort of guided us through that phase. Whereas I think the thing that the normie really lacks is intellectual curiosity. they just don't care. I mean, this is why, again, I think democracy is a joke, because people, most people are apolitical. They just don't care.
Yeah, that. But that's, again, really what speaks to me as being a kind of surf class or something. But a lot of them are also, as Ted Kaczynski said, over-socialized, hyper-social. Anything that's important to them relates socially. They wouldn't even conceive of doing something that would affect their social life. Oh, put them at odds with their work or with people they know. And this plays into their opinion. All their opinions will be based with the music they listen to, the shows they talk about will be based on social factors, what they believe everyone else is doing. This is an overriding thing with them, I think.
Oh, that's incredible. But you see, it sounds crazy, but then you look at the opposite of it, where someone who just, well, the opposite of that is like either sociopathy or autism, where you're just not thinking at all about what is acceptable behavior. And perhaps that's just as bad.
Well, I mean, yeah, we're not as bad as others in terms of that.
No, you
try to be very sort of cordial and sensitive towards.
I do, yeah, I do. I mean, I think I am capable of autism, but I'm like a part-time autist, you know. I'm also very attuned, or well, attuned, that sounds, again, that sounds, I'm very conscious of sounding like self-aggrandizement. I think I am attuned to what other people are feeling. I definitely try to be. And it matters to me that what are other people thinking? Have I overstepped something here? Boundaries, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah. And it matters to me in terms of community, especially, you know, with the movement. I hate infighting and I hate schisms developing and, you know, stupid gossip being spread and ruptures, you know. I hate all that. It's just stress. I find it something very always happens, stressful.
Though. Something always happens to rupture. There's always a new event around the next corner that you're going to be a big disagreement on. The war was the last one, I think. Or was there something since then?
Well, I think that's still going on, the Ukraine thing. There are several going on. But I think as long as the participants are... Yeah, the participants need to be sensible about it. They disagree, even vehemently, but don't go personal. Like I actually got into quite an animated thing the other day about AI on Telegram. Ooh. And okay. I was a bit more forceful than I probably should have been. And I made this Telegram post about it.
What'd you say?
It was about the matter of AI generated art. And I said I just don't believe that it's art. It might well be beautiful. It might well be useful, but it's not art.
Yeah. Yeah,
because art is an expression of the human soul, and that's partly an emotional thing. And computers don't have emotions. The whole thing. I mean, it's a big issue, and Zurius was one of the other participants in that discussion, and he's going to appear on Millennial this year. So I suspect that we might talk about that then.
And he
likes it. Yeah, he likes it. Yeah. But whereas I'm sort of viscerally opposed to it. And it was one of those rare occasions nowadays where I felt almost aggressive. You know, I really it was an issue that animated me. I really objected to the idea of AI art.
That's funny.
Well, it's the concept, like beauty matters, truth matters, the human soul matters. So, you know, it's like a convergence of.
Oh, I agree. I totally agree. I do agree. I kind of, there's so many things like that now that I would disagree with. Like right from the beginning, right from the start, I disagree with the use of CGI in movies and things. And
I know.
It's such old hat for me. I just need to do it. If someone likes it, I'm like, okay, you'd knock yourself out with that. Your AI.
Well, I mean, you're even more against that stuff than I am. You know, I mean, I've got time for digital tools. I quite like, and indeed, the synthesizer that I showed you. I don't know if I told you this, but it is actually digital.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But anyway, it's nice. I've got quite a lot of sympathy for digital stuff. Mm-hmm. The matter of, because at least it's still human, you know, it's still got some human element to it. The issue with AI is that it's increasingly divorced from the human element. And indeed, that's the whole point of it, that it's operating independently, if not sentiently, then independently. That's the whole point of it. Otherwise, it's just fancy programming. That's
I can't even see what people like about it. I don't even sense anything. I can just see another thing that's very obviously computer created. I don't even sense anything much in it. I did see one. I saw a friend of mine did a book cover, Spire, it's called, a science fiction book. It actually looks well. And he told me I thought it was probably someone just doing a Photoshop painting, but it was AI generated. And I thought, well, that looks well for what it is, a basic cover and whatever. But generally speaking, I can see right away that it's just one of these computer things, and I don't see what people are even excited about at all, to be honest.
All right. Well, it's a huge other topic, but I don't want to get into it now because I'm actually tired. We've been talking for so long, for 2 hours now. It's been a very lively discussion, and I'm worn out. But otherwise, I would want to get into that whole matter of AI and beauty and art. Because there's a huge question about what is art. And I think we used to have a fairly definite answer to that question, but certainly for the last 100 years, we haven't. And so it's not surprising that now AI is a spanner and thrown into that works. And it explodes the question all over again. But I would return to a fairly traditional definition of art, which is that it's not just beauty. I don't think it's just about beauty, because something that's not even man-made, something that's just natural or accidental or random, can be beautiful. So there's more to art than beauty.
Yes, it's very hard to define. Very hard to define.
Yeah, it's very hard to define. But I would say it's to do with beauty, but it's also to do with the human awareness of beauty and the human understanding of beauty, how a human feels about something that has beauty. So the human element is essential to art, in my humble opinion. Now, that's not to say that AI couldn't generate something that is interesting and beautiful, but I think it should be labeled as AI, so that people, because otherwise people are being deceived. And I don't like that.
No.
The only thing, this is what I say in my book there, is that it's only in trying to encapsulate and hijack the definition of art, which is what they did by saying art is a matter of personal expression. This is what all modern artists believe. That's really all. They think that's all there is to it, when that is just an aspect of what, as you say, something with many facets and aspects. That's almost impossible to truly define. I would add that it has a tribal element. Really, all good art is ultimately sort of mythical and tribal as well. But in terms of this stuff they're doing now, I made a joke, I think, on Telegram too, that all they need now is to make the audience digital, and they just have a perfect confined loop of
That's like the government can just elect a new people. We should wrap up, but first there are two super chats. Now, the first one is from Jacob, and he says, I said far out. What a day, a year, a life it is. So I don't know what that is a reference to or what he's celebrating, but he certainly sounds very upbeat. So,
hey, right on.
Thank you, Jacob, for that super chat, and I'm glad that you're having a good day.
Excellent.
If it's a reference to something, then I apologize for my ever-expanding cultural ignorance. Now, the other one is from ABC, and he says, this was relevant to when we were discussing about 10, 15 minutes ago when we were discussing wokery, and he said, they promote incompetence based on race, sex, and ideology, not just in biology, but military fields of scientific research. That's why Russia and China are ahead of the West in hypersonic missile technology, with 10% of the money available to the Americans. Wokery will destroy the country, literally. I mean, this is a big question, and it goes back to something like Afghanistan. Why did America retreat from Afghanistan last year? Was that because they wanted to? Or was it because the wokery, like the feminist, the trans majors and all that, just couldn't handle it? Now, or do we really believe that the foremost superpower in the world would do this to itself, would hobble itself with trans, or are the trans majors, the trans generals, are they just window dressing? And really, the decisions are being made by, you know, sane people, normal people elsewhere.
I don't think so.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know. But
I think things are often exactly as they seem.
Yeah.
More than people think.
Because the thing is, it was a humiliation for America to give up Afghanistan. So why would they engineer that? Why would they deliberately? I mean, it doesn't seem like something they would do voluntarily.
And did you see the thing with the China hiring the American, was it pilots or something?
Oh, yes. Yes, I did see that. Yeah. After America. Or I think it was actually Britain. I think it was British.
Oh, British. You're right. Yeah, they were British. Yeah. Yeah. This is what I see as a future, is kind of, this is what I mean by weird little gangs and people escaping into weird areas. This is where potentially you know, surviving, fleeing Westerners can get hired as elites amongst their supposed, or, you know, not, I shouldn't say just their enemies, but other nations and things. And you can have you can create that whole scenario again of like, you know, Commander Kursk in the Heart of Darkness, where you have the white savior and the junk. You can move to Taiwan and have your 10 wives and set up a crazy compound, and this is the future for fleeing refugees from the West, I think, possibly.
Oh my God. the wokery. All right. Well, and then was there something else about that I was going to say? So wokery will destroy the country. I mean, another way to look at it is, well, what is going to happen if you prevent your most capable people from getting university places because you're giving those places to dumplings? I mean, it can't end well, can it? I mean, just by definition, I don't think there's a clever trick there. It must have the effect that it sounds like it will have, which is you'll end up with less capable people. You'll end up with a less capable workforce, less capable scientific sector, less capable military sector. I mean, it just sounds inevitable. I don't see how that can be avoided if your best and brightest aren't being utilized. So, I mean, it just sounds like, suicidal. So, yeah, I would think that you'll end up just less capable. And that's to say nothing of morale. And then what will those intelligent people do if they can't thrive, you know, if they can't self-actualize, so to speak? Then what the... You know, it's not pretty. So, yeah, I think it's probably true that wokery will destroy our country. I think it probably will. I think it's, and you could say even that it's supposed to. I mean, it's like, again, we come back to feminism killing the space age. I mean, I think that's kind of what it's bound to do. It has to do that because the female, you know, female nature is ultimately egalitarian. It's sort of opposed to excellence.
Well,
I mean, obviously, there's more to it than that. But women are clearly far more up for fairness and equality than men. I mean, men don't really have any use for equality. I mean, it's of no fucking interest to us. I mean, I think this commenter is correct. Wokery will ultimately destroy a society. So anyway, okay, well, let's leave it there. So this has been a more lively discussion. I was expecting it to be a bit more sort of laid back, but actually it's been very engaging and interesting. So, well, at least for me, I hope for the listeners it has been as well. So, all right. Well, I will leave this one here. I'm feeling like I'm in millennial mode. So that's what I usually say on there. All right. Okay. Well, thank you, Aureus Press, for agreeing to appear on this with me. I'm sorry that we didn't have a specific topic, but I think it's turned out well anyway. So that's good. And we've kept it nice and focused from, you know, one segment to the next. So that's good. I think we've done okay.
Excellent.
All right. Okay, well, Aureus, do you want to tell people where they can find you?
Well, I'm on the Facebook, the Twitter, Gab, and Telegram. And I have a website, www.aureus-press.com. And I have a website for my science fiction compendium series, which is www.aegeon-sci-fi.com as well. And I guess that's it. Yeah. And my books are on Amazon. You can look me up.
Okay. Well, all right. Let's leave it there. So thank you, Aureus Press. I'm Millennial Woes. You can find me fairly easily. I'm on Odyssey, Telegram, BitChute, Gab, and I've got my own website, millennialwoes.com, which lists all of those things. Here was one from earlier. Thank you, Reed Johnson. This is from Do Not Despair, and he said, technology and scientific knowledge is being squandered on luxury. Well, I think you would agree with that, Aureus.
Mm-hmm. New ways to jerk off.
Okay.
All new ways. Anyways, thanks for having me.
And thank you. Thank you for appearing. All right. And thanks for everyone for listening. I hope you enjoyed this. Bye-bye for now.